So I want you to picture a house in your neighborhood, or maybe one you pass on your daily commute.
Oh, yeah. I feel like everyone immediately has one in mind.
Right, you know the exact property I'm talking about. The roof line is sagging dangerously in the middle. There are like rusted out cars slowly dissolving into the dead lawn.
The windows are totally boarded up with that rotting, graffiti-covered plywood.
Exactly. And the vegetation is just so wild. It looks like the earth is actively trying to swallow the structure whole.
Yeah, just radiating decay.
And it's been sitting there for years. You drive past it and you inevitably think, doesn't the city know about this? How is this allowed to just sit there in the middle of a neighborhood?
Well, that's the thing. According to a massive stack of 2026 policy memos we're doing a deep dive into today, the city absolutely knows.
But, and this is the wild part, their official paperwork probably says that rotting house is perfectly fine.
Which is just crazy.
It really is. So today, our mission is to unpack this brilliant new framework called the LA Blight Remediation Pipeline. We're going to look at how Los Angeles is proposing to use accessible AI and some incredibly clever combinations of public data to solve this seemingly impossible problem of extreme, persistent structural blight.
It really is a masterclass in how technology can finally expose these massive systemic blind spots in municipal bureaucracies.
Absolutely.
To really appreciate how revolutionary this new pipeline is, though, we kind of have to look closely at the failure mode it's designed to replace.
The old way of doing things.
Right. Most major cities across the country, Los Angeles included, rely on what urban planners call a find-to-comply enforcement model.
Fine to comply. Okay, let's unpack this a bit.
So in theory, it sounds entirely logical, right? Someone violates the municipal building code, the city issues a notice of violation, and if the owner doesn't fix it, the city fines them.
Seems straightforward enough.
It does. But the underlying flaw is that while this mechanism is fantastic at generating administrative revenue for the city budget,
Because they're collecting all those fines.
exactly, it is virtually useless at fixing physical severe decay. It traps the property in this agonizing years-long loop of official notices, paid fines, unpaid fines, appeals, and absolutely zero physical improvement to the structure itself.
Yeah, because looking at how the current system operates, it's basically an unintentional nuisance tax.
That's a great way to put it.
I mean, let's say we have an absentee landlord or maybe a land banking investment group hiding behind an LLC, and they're holding on to a severely blighted parcel.
Happens all the time.
The city issues a $1,000 fine for code violations. The landlord just pays the fine. They're effectively treating it like a subscription fee to keep their property rotting.
A subscription fee, yeah.
Right. They pay their monthly Let My Building Decay premium. The city cashes the check, and the administrative file gets a nice new updated timestamp.
While the neighbors are still living next door to a collapsing hazard that's attracting pests and dragging down their property values,
Exactly. It's infuriating.
it becomes a purely mathematical calculation for the property owner. Because, if the municipal fines total a few thousand dollars a year, but properly fixing a collapsed roof, abating the asbestos, and bringing the whole envelope up to code costs $80,000.
Paying that fine is a bargain.
Right, paying that subscription fee is the most rational financial choice for them. The system mathematically incentivizes the rot.
Wow, I never thought about it like that.
Yeah, and for owners who are completely indifferent or perhaps holding the land, hoping a major developer buys them out 10 years down the line, this administrative dance can go on for decades.
Decades of just paying a small fine while the neighborhood suffers.
Exactly. The crucial distinction here is that the city's current enforcement apparatus just isn't engineered to resolve extreme cases. It's engineered to document them. It manages the paper trail, not the physical reality on the street.
So the paperwork says action taken, but the roof is still literally caving in.
They're completely confusing the map for the territory.
Yeah. So if this spreadsheet and fine model is structurally broken, how does this new AI pipeline actually see the problem? Because moving from a database of unpaid tickets to physically remediating a property or like forcing a sale, that is a giant leap.
It is a massive jumping capability.
Yeah.
And the tech stack they propose to make that leap is remarkably elegant, primarily because it relies entirely on public data.
No secret government databases.
Nope. There are no proprietary databases, no restrictive authentication walls, and no massive software contracts. It basically pulls together five distinct data feeds.
Okay, what are they?
First, you have CalEnviroScreen 4.0 data. This is a state tool that maps environmental and socioeconomic burdens, things like pollution levels, poverty, and linguistic isolation across California census tracts.
Got it.
Second, the LADBS Customer Service Request Database. That's the city's main feed for open code violations and complaints.
The paper trail, basically.
Right. Third, building permit histories, just to verify if anyone has legally attempted to improve the property recently.
Okay, makes sense.
Fourth is the Google Street View Static API, which pulls panoramic street-level images of the parcel.
Just normal Google Street View.
Literally just normal Street View. And finally, the engine of the whole thing. A Claude AI vision model, specifically Claude Sonnet 4.6, which actually evaluates those images.
Okay, wait. I want to pause on that AI piece. Because the idea of letting a computer look at a Google Street View picture and decide if someone's house should be condemned, I mean, that sounds a little dystopian, right? Is it really safe to let an AI make that call?
It sounds scary at first, sure.
Yeah, like what if it just has bad taste in architecture? The document details this composite blade index where the final score is weighted. Visual distress makes up 40% of the score, violation density is 30%, case persistence is 20%, and structural risk is 10%.
Right, those are the weights.
But how does an AI actually evaluate visual distress without just making a highly subjective judgment about an ugly house?
That's where the prompting architecture comes in to strip away the subjectivity. The model isn't asked, you know, is this house ugly? It is given highly constrained, measurable parameters.
So it's not a beauty contest.
Not at all. The system prompts the vision model to score 5 distinct physical dimensions on a 0 to 10 integer scale. It maps pixels to specific empirical indicators of decay.
Like what, specifically?
It looks for vegetation overgrowth that breaches the public right of way.
Right.
It looks for structural deterioration, like a visibly failing building envelope.
Yeah.
It flags debris accumulation, abandonment indicators like plywood over doors or windows, and specific roof conditions. Missing shingles, noticeable sagging, or, you know, the presence of those big blue tarps.
Okay. That makes perfect sense. The AI is essentially counting empirical signs of structural failure, not rendering aesthetic verdict.
Exactly. It's not looking for outdated paint colors. It's looking for a collapsed porch.
Gotcha. And the document highlights a prototype parcel to show exactly what this looks like on the street. It's 267 South Avenue 18 over in Lincoln Heights.
Oh, yeah, the prototype.
I'm looking at the breakdown of this test case, and the numbers are just wild.
They really are. When that Lincoln Heights parcel runs through the pipeline, the AI evaluates the historical and current street view imagery and flags just catastrophic issues.
How bad was it?
Well, the vegetation overgrowth and debris are so intense, they almost entirely obscure the structure itself. And there's clear visual evidence of roof penetration.
Wow.
Yeah. So the AI scores every single visual dimension at an 8 or 9 out of 10.
Yikes.
Then the pipeline cross-references that visual data with the city's paper trail. This specific property had 8 open service request cases that had been sitting over for 1,620 days.
Wait, 1,600 days? That is over 4 years of bureaucratic wheel spinning with zero physical progress.
Exactly. So combining that extreme visual score with the administrative nightmare gives it a composite blight score of 8.47.
Out of 10.
Out of 10. And in this pipeline, anything over a certain threshold gets flagged as tier 1, meaning it's a candidate for immediate eminent domain action.
So it bypasses the endless loop of fines and escalates straight to physical resolution.
Yes, it just cuts right through the red tape.
That's amazing. But here's where it gets really interesting. You'd assume that the worst properties in Los Angeles, the absolute disaster zones like that Lincoln Heights house, would have the thickest files of active violations, right?
That is the logical assumption, absolutely.
Yeah.
You'd think the worse the physical condition of the house, the larger the paper trail in the city's database.
Right.
But the pipeline's initial deployment revealed the exact opposite. And it uncovered what is arguably the most profound flaw in the city's entire data apparatus.
So they targeted specific neighborhoods for a test run using that Calen virus screen data, right? Looking at the 99th percentile tracts, mostly in South LA and East LA.
Yeah, places already dealing with massive environmental burdens and systemic vulnerability.
I'd expect the system to just light up with thousands of active code violations in those areas.
Instead, it found properties that looked like absolute war zones on Street View, but had zero active violations in the city database.
Zero.
Zero. The policy document refers to this phenomenon as invisible blight.
Wait, how does a house with a visibly caved-in roof and boarded-up windows have zero violations? Are people in those neighborhoods just, like, not reporting it to the city?
The tragic part is that they were reported, but the case is simply aged out of the system.
Aged out? What does that mean?
This gets to the psychology and rigid structure of municipal bureaucracy. A complaint was filed by a neighbor years ago. Notices were sent by the city.
Okay.
Maybe the landlord paid a nominal fine, or maybe they just ignored it long enough for an administrative timer to run out. You have to remember, city clerks have massive, overwhelming queues of cases.
Oh, I'm sure they are swamped.
They are structurally incentivized to clear their desks. When a statute of limitations hits, or a procedural timer expires without a response, the path of least resistance is for the clerk to simply close the file.
Wow. So the bureaucracy prioritizes clearing its own backlog over solving the physical problem on the street?
Sadly, yes.
The clerk closes the file, the database updates to resolved, and the city officially considers the property fine. Meanwhile, the house is still rotting away.
That's the disconnect. The violation record is a lagging, easily manipulated indicator, but the sonographic evidence of a collapsed roof is immutable.
A picture doesn't lie.
Right, and this invisible blight exists completely outside the established paper trail, which is why the pipeline includes a critical, mandatory human-in-the-loop safeguard.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about that, because we don't want robots just condemning houses blindly.
Exactly. The system doesn't just automatically trigger bulldozers or legal action based on a photograph. If the vision model flags extreme distress, say, a visual score of 7 or higher, but the city database shows 0 active violations, the pipeline routes that specific file to a human reviewer.
Oh, I see.
The human looks at the street view imagery, confirms the AI's assessment is accurate and not just, you know, a glitch or a weird shadow, and then manually initiates a new enforcement referral.
So they are using the technology to shine a flashlight into the dark corners of the bureaucracy, but relying on a human to actually pull the trigger.
Perfectly stated.
So what does this all mean? Let's talk about pulling that trigger. Whether it's a human catching invisible blight or our Lincoln Heights prototype hitting tier 1 status natively, what happens next?
Right. How does it actually get fixed?
Yeah. How does the city actually take control of the property to fix it?
It initiates what the framework calls a disposition cascade.
Disposition cascade. That sounds very official.
It is. It's a highly structured, 4-step legal and market mechanism designed to transition the property from a public hazard into a community asset.
Okay, walk me through the steps.
Step 1 is a 90-day owner final notice coupled with a fair market value buyout offer.
So the city essentially shows up and says, look, we have undeniable AI-verified, time-stamped proof that you are running a nuisance property. Fix it in 90 days, or we will buy it from you at current market value right now.
Exactly. They're leveraging the threat of eminent domain to force an immediate decision.
Wow, so no more messing around.
It creates a forced decision matrix for the owner. The endless delay tactics of the find-to-comply era are gone.
So if they don't fix it, what's step 2?
If the owner walks away and takes the buyout, or if they refuse and the city legally forces the acquisition, the property moves to step 2. The adjacent owner priority purchase.
What does that mean?
The city clears the blighted structure, leaving an empty, clean lot, and gives the immediate next-door neighbors an exclusive 45-day window to buy that lot at fair market value.
Okay, wait, let me push back on step 2 for a second. If the neighbor is buying it at fair market value, why is that even considered a perk? And honestly, from the other side of the argument, why should the next-door neighbor get first dibs before the open market gets a chance to bid on it? It feels a bit like a government handout, restricting the free market.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it really isn't. The policy frames this under a powerful concept called proximity freedom.
Proximity freedom.
Yeah. It directly addresses the collateral damage of the city's previous administrative failure. Think about the externality costs.
You mean what the neighbors had to deal with?
Exactly. For years, maybe decades, the adjacent neighbors have absorbed the financial and physical punishment of living next to a collapsing structure.
Right.
Try selling your house when the one next door looks like a haunted house, you know. Your own property value is suppressed by proxy. They dealt with the fire hazards, the pest infestations, the crime risk. The blighted owner essentially stole value from the neighbors through their inaction.
Oh, wow. So giving the neighbors first rights isn't a subsidy because they're paying full price for the dirt. It's the city acknowledging that their failure to enforce the code forced the neighbors to bear the brunt of the damage.
Precisely. It is a restoration of a market condition that was denied to those adjacent neighbors.
That makes a lot of sense.
Furthermore, from an urban planning and economic perspective, adjacent land expansion creates outsized equity for those specific homeowners.
Because they can combine the lots.
Yes. If a neighbor buys the 5,000 square foot lot next door and legally merges it with their own, the combined 10,000 square foot parcel is often worth significantly more than the sum of its parts.
Right, because now you have a huge piece of land.
Exactly. It allows local families to build multi-generational wealth, maybe add an accessory dwelling unit, or simply expand their footprint, directly enriching the stakeholders who suffered the most.
Okay, that reframing is incredibly compelling. And if the neighbors just pass on buying it, what happens then?
Then it moves to step three, a neighborhood builder request for proposals. The cleared lot is offered to local, smaller-scale builders, but with a strict contingency. They must commit to completing residential construction within 18 months.
I see. To prevent the builder from just land banking the empty lot, holding it for 5 years, and starting the whole cycle all over again.
Exactly. The goal is housing, not speculation.
Makes total sense.
And if no local builder takes it under those terms, it finally hits step four, an open competitive bid to any qualified developer.
So the whole process prioritizes the local community first.
The entire cascade is designed to keep the value, the development, and the benefits localized to the neighborhood as much as possible.
Okay, so we have this beautifully designed mechanism. We understand the data stack, the AI evaluation, the human oversight, and the legal disposition cascade.
Yeah, it's a very complete system.
But we have to talk about scale and feasibility.
The money question.
Yeah, because Los Angeles is a massive, sprawling metropolis, running complex AI vision models, pulling API data for thousands of images, orchestrating legal buyouts. I mean, doing this across thousands of properties sounds like an absolute budgetary nightmare for a city that's probably already strapped for cash.
You'd think so, right? But the economic efficiency is actually the most staggering part of the entire pipeline.
Really?
Oh, yeah. The document details a test run of 187 blighted parcels.
Okay.
To run the full digital pipeline, fetching the Google Street View APIs, processing the image data, and running it all through the Claude Vision model to get those dimensional scores, the total cost was $7.60.
Wait, I just want to make sure I heard that right. $7.60 total for nearly 200 properties?
Total. For the whole batch, it breaks down to about 4 cents per parcel.
That is insane.
And it gets even cheaper at scale because the system caches the AI prompts.
Let's explain that caching concept for a second. Caching the prompts means the AI remembers the core instructions, right? Like, it doesn't have to read the rule book of what a broken roof or overgrown weeds look like from scratch for every single house.
Exactly. Think of it like keeping a massive cookbook open on the counter to the exact recipe you need, rather than walking to the library to find the book every single time you want to bake a cake.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
Thanks. Mm. The foundational instructions are stored locally in the system's memory, so you only pay the compute cost for the new image analysis, not for reloading the massive set of rules.
Which drops the price even further.
Right. It drops at roughly 3.5 cents per parcel. Mm. If Los Angeles decided tomorrow to sweep all 12,000 potential extreme blight candidates citywide, the computing cost would be around
$500. $500 to comprehensively audit every potentially hazardous property in a major global city?
Yes.
That is a massive paradigm shift, especially when you contrast it with the traditional legal route the city currently has to take.
Oh, the old system is just, it's painfully expensive. Under the old system, to condemn a property using California Health and Safety Code, Section 17980, the city has to initiate a formal nuisance abatement proceeding.
Which involves lawyers, I assume.
Lots of lawyers. A single contested proceeding takes 18 to 36 months of bureaucratic grinding. The city has to dispatch physical inspectors repeatedly, gather sworn testimonies, file motions, and fight injunctions in court.
What does all that cost?
It costs the city between $50,000 and $250,000 in staff time and legal fees just to resolve one single property.
$250,000 and 3 years of legal trench warfare versus a 4 cent API call that takes 3 seconds.
Exactly. And by front-loading the visual evidence, it completely neuters the landlord's ability to delay.
Right, because the proof is right there.
The city doesn't show up to court arguing about the subjective definition of blight. They show up with time-stamped, AI-verified, dimensionally scored, photographic proof that the roof is gone.
You can't argue with a picture of a collapsed roof.
It removes the ambiguity that bad actors rely on. You drastically accelerate the legal process, significantly reduce the likelihood of drawn-out contested cases, and save millions of taxpayer dollars while actually resolving the physical hazard on the street.
The data becomes an undeniable lever for physical action.
That's exactly right.
It's an absolute masterclass in problem solving. And, you know, as we wrap up this deep dive, I really want you to think about how this framework applies far beyond municipal real estate law.
It has huge implications.
Right. This pipeline is proof that sometimes the data you desperately need to fix a massive systemic problem isn't neatly organized in a spreadsheet. It's not in the official database.
Oftentimes it isn't.
Sometimes the official records are actively lying to you because they represent bureaucratic processes rather than reality. The truth is literally out there on the street, waiting for you to find a new way to measure it.
Building on that, the discovery of invisible blight leaves us with a really critical question to consider.
What's that?
Well, if a relatively inexpensive AI vision model, just looking at public Google Street View images, can uncover extreme hazards that years of official, stamped, and approved city paperwork completely missed.
Yeah.
What other invisible crises are hiding in plain sight in our society right now? What other massive systemic failures are we completely ignoring simply because the official database tells us everything is fine?
That rotting house at the end of the block might just be the beginning. Keep looking past the paperwork, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.